It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates Americans eat over 46 million turkeys every Thanksgiving. Last year's average price for a Thanksgiving dinner was over $60, with the biggest price tag being the bird in the middle of the dinner table.
But what goes into the cost of a turkey from farm to table, and how do turkey prices we see now compare to previous years?
Deanna Scott co-owns Old Glory Turkey Farm in Elkhorn. Deanna, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Ron Kane is here, a faculty associate and extension specialist in the Department of Animal and Dairy Sciences at UW-Madison. Ron, welcome.
Thanks.
Ron, the Agriculture Department is reporting average prices for the average turkey, nearing its lowest point since 2019, 94 cents a pound. Why are turkey prices dropping?
Yeah, that's a good question. Supply is actually down a bit, so we would expect prices to go up, but that doesn't seem to have happened. I think maybe demand is also slipping a bit. So,
Deanna, turkey prices fluctuate from year to year. How is demand this year for your turkeys compared to previous years?
Our demand remains strong. We did have a few customers this year who could not financially afford a turkey, and they've been with us for years, and it just wasn't something they could do this year. So they asked to switch and hopefully try again next year.
What is driving up your costs? Where do they come from mostly?
The feed, the processing, it all goes up every year. And so we try to keep our costs as low as we can, but also we have to make a profit as well.
You know, Ron, some birds may be moved out of state for processing. What effect do processing costs have on the overall cost of a turkey?
Yeah, it's definitely a cost, and it's going up. There's transportation, as you mentioned. Labor costs are up. So it doesn't go down. They continue to go up, yeah.
Are you seeing other places in the supply chain, from raising a turkey to getting it on the table, that are also rising in cost for farmers?
I would say disease issues have been a huge factor in the last few years. We've heard a lot about avian influenza, certainly, and it's still an ongoing problem. There's also another virus, avian metapneumovirus, that has been going through turkey flocks, and they grow slower, and it also damages egg production of the breeders, so poult costs have gone up.
Deanna, you avoid using antibiotics on your flock. How do you protect your turkey flocks from disease?
Well, we try to use biosecurity measures. We don't let people walk in by the turkeys. They are raised on pasture, so we could have it happen to us. We've been very fortunate it has not happened. We have a very healthy flock. A lot of that is proper ventilation, making sure there's not too much crowding, and just taking general security to make sure they are well cared for, well-fed, happy, healthy, and not picking on each other, which happens if they get too crowded.
Have you been successful with those measures?
We have. We haven't had any issues with any diseases with our turkeys. We have lost a few to predators, and unfortunately, that's a little bit, it's nature for you. So we just try and do the best we can and improve as we can, but some things are just unfortunately unavoidable.
And Ron, last year the American Farm Bureau Federation reported the average cost of a Thanksgiving dinner was over $60. That's down a bit from a record high in 2022. How could the total cost of a Thanksgiving dinner affect the choices people make about the turkeys they purchase?
There are different levels of turkeys. As mentioned here, there are some of the more pastured and antibiotic free and things. So I think that is one difference, whether you go with the conventional turkey or something more of a specialty product, probably a big difference.
We are exploring the cost of turkeys and a Thanksgiving dinner this year with Elkhorn turkey farmer Deanna Scott. And Ron Kane is here, UW Extension Animal and Dairy Sciences Specialist. Deanna, your farm is the winner of Walworth County's Best Turkey in Show. Can you talk about that honor and what makes a turkey a high quality?
Yes, our daughter raised 16 turkeys for the Walworth County Fair this year, and she had the opportunity to show four. And she did it all herself, just learning the practices we use here at the farm. And she was awarded best in show and reserve best in show with her turkeys. And it's just her learning how to do it and learning how to do it in a way that really works for them and gets them to be the best that they can be.
How did you get into this business? How did you get into turkey farming?
Yeah, we wanted to raise turkeys for ourselves and raise them the right way out on pasture and put them out and teach our kids the value of raising animals for meat, for consumption, but doing it in a way that is humane and really growing that passion for farming with our children. So it started with 6 turkeys our first year, and now we're up to 650. And so, and we've grown as a family, as a unit. This is a passion we have. We get to see the same people year after year. So it's a great experience for our whole family, and we really enjoy it. It's more of a passion than anything else.
How do you move the turkeys in and out of the field?
They come in on their own at night. So when it gets dark, they know to come to the building. And if they're stragglers, our children will go round them up.
You have them well trained.
Yes.
Ron, you know, it seems as if there are all sorts of types of farm businesses. When you look at the scale of turkey farming in the state, what do you notice? How does our state rank compared to other states?
I notice a lot of variation in size, as was mentioned. And yeah, I think there's opportunities for many different production methods, certainly. I would say, by and large, we have either, you know, what I'll say, small to medium producers like Deanna, and then we have quite large producers, you know, 40,000 birds, things like that, that are contracted with a company. One of the big reasons for that, that there's not a lot of middle ground, is there's lack of processing facilities. So that's a big challenge. As far as where is Wisconsin, we don't officially publish any numbers because most of the birds are raised by one company, but I would guess we're probably somewhere between 12th and 15th in production as far as states.
All right. Well, I appreciate both of you for taking the time, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having us.
Ron Kane is a faculty associate and extension specialist in the UW-Madison Department of Animal and Dairy Sciences, and Deanna Scott co-owns Old Glory Turkey Farm in Elkhorn. Now, for advice on how to cook a turkey, we turn to Brad Kahn, culinary instructor in continuing education at Madison College and a food service supervisor at UW-Madison. Brad, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks. Good to be here again.
So Thanksgiving being just around the corner, for someone who is hosting family and friends this year, what is your advice for what they need to do now to prepare? I saw that big exhale, inhale.
I tried to make that quiet. It wasn't very quiet. As you might expect, I get asked that a lot,
yeah.
You know, obviously, and this time of year especially. And so I think that, you know, and people always ask me how I do my turkey, and is mine more involved than others? Yeah, of course. But then again, that's because, you know, there are things that I know how to do that maybe other people don't know how to do. So really, the biggest advice I have for anybody, and of course, when you asked me to be here, I did a little searching on the internet just to see what it looks like out there. And there's just so much out there. There's so much out there to see, and regardless of what they all tell you on the internet, cooking a turkey is hard. It's not hard. It's just involved.
Well, there's an art to it.
It's involved, and it's something that none of us, you know, who does roasts anymore?
Yeah.
I barely ever do it. So, you know, so roasting a turkey to get it right is really not easy. You know, you got to pay attention. So what I like to tell people is that they should look around online and see what they and if they see something that they like and they go, oh, I can do that, then there it is. By all means, go ahead and do that thing. You know, and then other than that, the other advice, I just try to get people to be organized with it.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I say to people, and I think this is not going to be a big deal. But then I say it and they go, oh, I didn't think of that. Write a prep list. Grab a clipboard and write out everything you're going to make and when you're going to make it and work backwards and say, if I want this to come out of the oven at this time and I want to carve it at this time, then I want it to be out of the oven here and I want to start putting it in the oven here and I want to start working on it here. And you do that with all the things that you are making. And so that covers two things. That not only gives you, you know, a little bit, so now you don't have to think about it. It's all written down and you know, oh, it's time for me to start working on the stuffing. And, you know, so you get that. Not only that, but when people come in and almost always want to help, it's very difficult to have people say, what can I do? And now you've got to think, what can they do? Well, I don't know, you know, what they know how to do. And I don't really know what they really want to do. And so it's much easier to just say, here's a prep list, find something on there. And if somebody comes up to you and says, I see you want to make mashed potatoes, how many? I mean, and then you can say, oh, good, I want you to make 12 potatoes. And I want you to peel them. And I want you to put them in some boiling. And then you, at least you have a direction.
Everybody's working from the same list.
And everybody's working from the same list.
Yeah.
And they have an idea rather than just hitting you with the standard, what can I do for you now? And you're thinking, I don't know. it's the worst feeling when you're like, I don't know.
Are there any essential tools that you love to have on hand in the kitchen for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, and let me just say the very first one that I think is a good idea, because I have a story that I won't get into, but a friend of mine who was doing a Thanksgiving turkey and took way longer than it should have. And it was because the oven was not calibrated properly. And she thought she was cooking her turkey at 325 and she was cooking it at 275.
Oh, goodness.
So why is this taking so long? And I'm like, well, that would be why. And she called me and I said, I guarantee you that oven isn't calibrated right. So if you can make sure that your oven, right, so just a simple oven thermometer that lives in your oven and that can tell you what the temperature is probably a really good idea. Also, one of those probe thermometers, which you can spend a fortune on, very fancy ones that connect that are Bluetooth enabled and whatever. But I just have
Wow.
Oh, yeah. So now you can go, you know, hit golf balls while you're monitoring your turkey. And I'm like, okay, if you want to do that, go right ahead. I would rather, you know, be home. But anyway, so there's that. So I'd rather just have one that, you know, the probe is in the turkey.
Yep.
And then the wire comes out and it's sitting 3 feet away in the wire is connected and it tells you when the turkey is done. And it's just a huge difference, because what a lot of people do and why your grandmother says it takes 9 or 10 hours to make a turkey is because every 20 minutes they're opening the oven and they're losing all the heat and it's taking too long. And right. So if you are able to leave the oven closed, basting doesn't really do very much for it. And so you can just leave it closed and it'll cook much quicker.
That's what I mean. Is there a strategy to when you should check it or how often? Because every time you open the oven,
you're losing heat.
You're losing heat.
Absolutely.
You're losing time.
Yes, you are. And so that's why it's easier to, you know, I had a cousin once who was like, I got to put the turkey in now. I'm like, when are we eating? It's 6. And I'm like, it's noon. This is going to be done in 2 hours. I'm like, I have this probe thermometer. We're going to, in it goes, and it's going to tell us when the turkey is at the right temperature.
Yeah.
You know, and even then you have the problem with the dark meat and the light meat and which one is done, you know, so that's really, again, the difficulty of like doing a turkey, and they want you to flip it over and they want you to cut this up and they want you to, and if you want to do it, you should, by all means, go ahead and do that. But yeah, it's just being able to do that and have that thermometer in so that you know, yeah, that's to me. And here's, I will say the last one. I wrote this down for myself because I remember this. People come and they want to help. And I say, here, put this on. And I give them a chef coat. Because, yeah, I don't want them to get full of food or whatever.
Yeah.
Or they're washing dishes or whatever.
Yeah.
People will wash dishes for you all day. If you give them a chef coat, people think it's the coolest. I don't know. I don't understand, because I wear one every day, right? So I don't think twice about it. But
they're officially part of your kitchen.
Totally.
Yeah.
If you buy a couple of chef coats and then your guests don't get full of food.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they just have the best time. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a
great idea.
Herbs, spices, rubs, where do you go with that?
Brining your bird if for a day beforehand. I don't like to brine for too long, because then you're kind of, you run the risk of turning your turkey into sort of lunch meat. It won't be, but it'll sort of have that a little bit of that taste if you let it go for 2 or 3 days. So like 1 day for a whole turkey. if you brine it. So brining it is just getting, right, some seasoning, flavoring, you know, salt, essentially. Mm-hmm. A brine in its simplest form is water and salt, right? 20 to 1 is really, okay, there's the ratio, right? So it's 20 to 1 for every ounce, you know, half or whatever, 1 ounce of salt, 20 ounces of water. And then after that, you can add all kinds of flavorings to it there. But yeah, you can, but brining, for me, that's the start of it all. And then afterwards, you can season it from there with, yeah, all kinds of fresh herbs. And
does brining help lock in fresh herbs and other things?
It can. So what you can do is, like I said, at simplest in simplest terms, it's salt and it's water. But then if you basically make a hot, you're making tea essentially, but you're making tea with thyme and with rosemary and with with fresh herbs, and so that will get into the brine when you cook the brine. And then what I do is I try to make the, if you have time, you make the brine and it's the right concentration, but if you don't have time, you do double strength and then you add the same amount of ice.
Oh, okay.
Right, so you cook it, so if it's 20 to 1 water, half of that water is ice. And then you've made a brine that's hot and it's cooked and it's tea, and you strain out all the, you know, solids, and then you put it over ice, and then it's cold, and then you're ready to go immediately. So that's a nice little trick to have up your sleeve.
What is your advice for cleanup and making it manageable at the end when everyone's a little tired, a little sated, you know, and now the kitchen has a lot of dirty pots and pans?
Chef coats. And then people will do it for you. No, I, you know, it, but they will. They'll help. You know, one of the things that we try to teach culinary students when you're first in culinary school is that you really, really, really need to clean as you go. Mm-hmm. And it's very important that you keep up with, because, yes, you can turn your kitchen into a disaster very quickly. The good news is that most people don't really have the room to allow their kitchen to turn into that kind of a disaster. So maybe they've already learned how to do it. But I think the best way to do that is to just take a little time. And to be perfectly honest with you, I have always felt that if you take a few minutes to clean in between whatever you're doing, it gives you a chance to clear your head and, you know, go think about what you want to do next. I used to, I mean, for culinary students taking exams and they were confused about something or they were like freaking out because they couldn't remember how to do something, I would say to them, go do some dishes. just go do some physical work that doesn't involve you thinking too much about things. And I guarantee you at some point it'll come to you. And that's, you know, that's school. And this is Thanksgiving, but it's still stressful. And so if you have a chance to, you know, all right, I'm going to stop here. I'm going to do some cleaning. Sometimes when you come back to the cooking, you're like, oh, that's right. I was going to do this and then this and then this and then this.
It little refresh your,
a little there. Refresh, a little zen and refresh. And yes, do some dishes, put some things away. Just kind of keep up with it. That's the real key, is that you have to keep up with it.
Brad, thank you for stopping by.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thanks. Good to see you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Take care, you too.
That was Brad Kahn, a culinary instructor in continuing education at Madison College and a food service supervisor at UW-Madison. Earlier, we talked about the costs of a turkey dinner with UW-Madison poultry specialist Ron Kane and turkey farmer Deanna Scott in Elkhorn. So whether you're roasting or you're deep frying or putting that bird on the barbecue grill, share your turkey cooking tips. Share your stories with us. We'd love to hear from you. Email Wisconsin Today at WPR.org. That's Wisconsin Today at WPR.org.